Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Halfway through the week, and the Suns are in action tonight. We have tomorrow night, Thursday night NFL football, which I'm looking forward to, even though I don't think Thursdays are going to be around much longer for the NFL. Just my personal feeling on stuff that I see, read, hear, of people whose opinions I respect, not just throwing something against the wall. Cowboys-Vikings, that'll be tomorrow night. Trying to sit here and analyze why the Cardinals aren't good this year. I can do that for hours. I'll do that for minutes today because there's a ton of other stuff going on that's far more interesting to me than the football team here that's not good. Biggest disappointment in the NFL, Carolina or Arizona? Probably Carolina because Super Bowl team, but the Cardinals would have to be right there. And I'm not going to sit there and rub noses in it. It's just a fact. And with our just dreadful college football season now finally behind us. But there's some college stuff to get to that's of interest to me today. The Suns play tonight. I've not done some Suns here in about, I don't know, 3-4 weeks. So Paul Coro is going to be with us. They play Atlanta tonight downtown. That's Dwight Howard in town. And I know that people are going to just look at records, but the fans that I've talked to, the fans that watch them play, are, I think, on the same boat as me, that they are getting there slowly. It takes time to turn the Titanic around, right? Slowly Earl Watson's figuring it out, but they're fun to watch. There's this story of DeMarcus Cousins at Sacramento admitting that Bledsoe and John Wall and Cousins are all trying to figure out how the three of them can get together and play at some place. So could that be in Phoenix? I'll talk to Paul Coro about that and some other stuff. The college football playoff came out last night, and I did watch. It was the only thing in sports I watched last night, other than a couple minutes, the Coyotes. But Alabama being number one. So, Eric, if Alabama loses in the SEC title game, which nobody's expecting them to do, but let's just say for argument's sake that Alabama did lose this coming weekend, would Alabama fall out of the number one spot in the college football playoff, in your humble opinion?
I don't think so.
I don't either. Ohio State is sitting there at number two. Would Ohio State have the resume to jump Alabama, who's not playing in the Big Ten title game?
I guess. It doesn't really matter, though. 1 through 4 makes no difference. As long as you're somewhere in the top four,
that's the most important thing. I'll disagree with you on that.
Because if you're going to win the title, you're going to have to play the best team anyway. So for me, 1 through 4 really doesn't mean much, but I'll play along.
Well, I'm looking at this and saying Ohio State is not playing in the Big Ten title game.
I would say they would jump ahead of Alabama if Alabama lost this weekend.
If Alabama lost, I disagree with you. I don't think whatever Alabama did, Alabama could just go out and get crushed, and it wouldn't matter to these folks. Supposedly, being a conference champion is a big deal. Supposedly. In one of the metrics that they use. And yet, I'm looking at the way that things are shaping up this year. And it's becoming more and more apparent that being a conference champion doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot.
Which is pretty inconsistent with what they've said in the past.
That is correct.
So
because I want chaos to happen this weekend, mm-hmm. I do want chaos to happen.
Don't expect it, but if you want it, I can pull for that.
You don't think Colorado can beat Washington?
That wouldn't be chaos to me. Chaos to me would be Alabama losing. Chaos to me would be...
Alabama would still make top four.
Yeah.
Alabama would still make top four if they lost. Washington losing means they're out. Pac-12's not going to get any team in because Colorado doesn't have enough to get over on these others, which means Ohio State just sits there not even playing this weekend. And you're going to have Penn State, Wisconsin. Penn State, which beat Ohio State, may not make it. That's chaos to me. That means your system stinks.
And the system does stink because in the past, Brad, they've told teams, you know what? You really need to go schedule hard non-conference games. That means a lot. Okay, Washington played no one in the non-con, and Wisconsin played LSU in the non-con, yet there we sit with Washington ahead of Wisconsin.
So if Colorado beats Washington, okay.
Michigan's so happy Colorado's having a great year.
Sure, because
so
Michigan
happy.
Beat Colorado by 17.
They did.
They beat Colorado.
In a game that was much closer than that, by the way.
But they beat them.
Yep.
So there's no way that Colorado gets over Michigan.
Nope.
Shouldn't be anyway.
No, there shouldn't be.
Shouldn't be. I mean, we're sitting here speaking in absolutes, but we don't know what these folks are thinking.
It's all needle and haystack. You're right. Who knows?
But is it all needle and haystack?
Sure.
Or is it all what is going to produce the most gigantic number
of course.
For the television people?
Of course.
And then what is going to produce the best outcome? Like if Colorado beats Washington, Colorado gets to go to the Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal.
Sure.
That's a huge deal. And if Penn State beats Wisconsin but doesn't end up getting in the top four, Penn State gets to go to the Rose Bowl. This is a program that was just underground after everything that happened with Joe Paterno.
The Big Ten champion probably won't make the playoff. Just let that sink in for a minute.
Right.
Like it
right.
just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the Big Ten. So, but you could go back to strength of schedule. Ohio State beat Oklahoma.
And I think Ohio State's the best team in the Big Ten, even though they're not the champs.
I agree with you.
I know I'm taking a parachute and jumping out of a plane with that, but that's just the way I feel.
So the eyeball test on all this is...
It means a lot. It really, to me, it really does. I watched Penn State play Rutgers. It was 9-0 in the third quarter before Penn State finally put their foot on the gas. I mean, if Ohio State played Penn State 10 times, Ohio State would beat them 8 or 9 times. I'm convinced of that.
You and I talked yesterday, and I said I would not be surprised if Michigan fell or if Michigan stayed in the top four.
Because
they lost, the way they lost, how they lost, all that stuff, they fall out. So now, if Clemson loses to Virginia Tech, which should not happen.
No.
Should not happen.
But if you want chaos.
But I want chaos. I want to sit here next Monday and say, we got chaos. So,
it wouldn't be as big of an upset as Florida beating Alabama if that happened.
Right.
But I agree. I don't think Clemson's losing.
So, you know, I go through all these scenarios towards this weekend. And I do think they're compelling. Like Friday night, I know that there's fans. We work with some people here that are Colorado fans over at Skyview. We all have our hangups, okay? But they're looking forward to seeing Colorado play against Washington in the Pac-12 title game. I'm actually looking forward to that game. I think that's going to be an interesting game. I do.
I do, too.
I don't care about Clemson, but I've got to watch because the Heisman thing for Watson. So I got to watch that.
Because you have to think, Brad, and don't you agree, all the pressure is on Washington Friday.
Oh, there's no
question. I mean, Colorado in a way is really in a no-lose situation because I think even if they lose the game, they're still probably going to end up in the Rose Bowl if Washington goes to the CFP,
Washington goes
right?
to CFP, correct. You could do some horse trading. You could do some horse trading around the Bulls, but yeah. I think whatever happens to Colorado, their story is already complete.
Yep.
That's a great, great comeback. It's a testament to being a patient athletic administration. You could say the same thing here about Ray and Greg with what they're doing with their head coaches. Usually what happens is a coach comes in, he has a honeymoon period of a year or two, and then he builds a certain direction, and then he hits a plateau, and then he gets launched. But if you're patient, and I'll give the example of McIntyre up at Colorado, they were patient with him, and he was still getting his head kicked in, and slowly he built it, and look what happened. Kyle Whittingham, when Kyle first went to Utah, he was on this show telling us, we don't have Pac-12 caliber players here. We don't. Yeah, he was recruiting Arizona while he was telling us that, but he's done a slow build.
And he's a really good football coach who gets the most out of his players. So even if he's not bringing in the 4- and 5-star blue chips like a lot of these other Pac-12 schools, he knows how to win with the players that he has. He always has, going all the way back to when they were in the Mountain West Conference. So
I'm looking at how he's built his program, and I'm looking over at Colorado. Do I think they're as good as Alabama? Heck no. Do I think there's, even though our buddy Brock said Washington could beat Alabama, maybe in, I don't know, GoPro racing. I don't know, but not in football. It seems to me, though, that when you look at what came out of the CFP, I don't see any scenario where there's not going to be controversy on the system based on purely Ohio State. Purely on Ohio State. Because they're not going to fall out of this thing. They're not. They can't release something and say, well, they didn't play this weekend, so they're not as good as Penn State, even though Penn State beat them. I can't see that happening. I would have to believe that they're going to expand by two more, push this thing to 6. There'll be controversy around 6 at some point, and then they'll push the thing to 8.
But then if you get it to 8, you're starting to, in my opinion, sort of turn the regular season into kind of the NFL, where there's only a select few games where these players, because when you get to 8 teams, you're going to you can easily make the CFP with 2 losses with 8 teams.
But don't you think they've already done that with the CFP?
A little bit.
Look at what the SEC, and I know we're running along to this segment, it's fine. Look at what the SEC has done every November. They take that second or third week in November and you have Alabama playing Furman. It's no different than ASU playing NAU on week 1. But basically, they're just setting up a bye week. And we don't have somebody that is overseeing the process saying to, let's say, Washington State, why are you playing these teams? And oh, by the way, you lost to them. Why are you playing this who cares schedule early in the year? You guys want to be big boys? Then go play big boys. You know, next season, ASU has New Mexico State, San Diego State, Texas Tech at Texas Tech. They're going to be 2-1, maybe even 3-0. They're going to be that right out of the gate. But is that enough of a schedule? And I'm not banging on ASU because I think they've played better teams here the last few years. For years and years, they'd play just dreadful schedules in early part of the season. Just awful scheduling.
And I honestly don't think that's a terrible non-conference schedule next year for ASU.
New Mexico State.
It's not elite, but every school has one or two of those on their schedule.
Get rid of those one or two.
It's hard, though. It's hard for teams to do that because they have to look at the big picture. It's just like Wisconsin. They played a hard non-conference schedule. They beat LSU. Washington yes. played no one. Who's ahead of who? Washington's ahead of Wisconsin. So it goes back to the, you got to make up your mind. Do you want us to win more games or do you want us to play better schools? Because right now, the CFP, I mean, technically, Wisconsin has played a tougher schedule than Washington.
No,
they have.
I agree with you on that. But is the conference better top to bottom in the Big Ten? At the top of the Big Ten, it's good.
Not on that side of the Big Ten.
Not on that side. Okay. But if you look at what has gone on in the Pac-12 this year, the bottom feeders of the Pac-12 this year,
mm-hmm.
by if we're talking about strength top to bottom of conference.
The bottom of the Big Ten is bad on both sides. So
I think that the bowl games, you have to start looking at the bowl games here. Even the bowl game here had to go out and be funded by ESPN again to have a sponsor again. It was not for years. It was the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. But then they come up with this new way of doing it. ESPN controls the sponsorship. So last year was Battle Frog. I had everybody saying, who the heck, what the heck is Battle Frog? This year it's PlayStation. Every kid's going to get a PlayStation. It'll be great that it's PlayStation. But it's not something that you look at and say, are these bowls that are shelling out huge amounts of dollars, sponsors are shelling out huge amounts of dollars to sponsor these bowl games. Are they looking at their return on the investment and saying, we've got the title rights here, and because a team did not make the top 4, they're going to be let down that they have to come to our game? You know, you got to look at that a little bit closer too. Oregon fired their football coach. I want to get into that and some interesting names. And Tiger is back on the golf course. I'm thrilled with that bit of news. We'll have that on the other side. Get into both topics. Paul Coro in about 10 minutes. Plenty of content up on our website on a Wednesday. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Sports360AZ.com, a good Wednesday. Brad Sussmath with you. Paul Coro in about 10 minutes. And we will visit about the Suns tonight, taking on Atlanta. We'll get some NFL a little bit later in the show, potentially. Tomorrow, it'll be Goody at the Movies, and Jimmy Vaccaro will do our thing. Actually, went and saw a movie last night, Man Down, which is somewhat disturbing. So I'll get into that with Bill. That'll be on tomorrow's show as we do movies every week. It was with Shia LaBeouf. I want to get into Oregon. So Oregon fired their coach yesterday. And so Mark Helfrich gets blown out. And there's lots of tentacles to this story that I think could impact Arizona State and actually the state of Arizona in terms of recruiting. Let me first go through this. Mark Helfrich was a very good person that I dealt with here at ASU. Every year that we were at the Pac-12 Media Days, Mark Helfrich was always very accommodating, very nice. Mark Helfrich, though, was not going to hang on to this job. Perhaps potentially it's because he was too nice and his defense was it wasn't as bad as ASU's. It was close. But what they did yesterday at Oregon, will have aftershocks throughout the Pac-12 conference and actually nationally. When Oregon's down, and they haven't been down for a long time, and Mark Helfrich was part of why they were down, I think you have to take advantage of that. And clearly Washington did when they hired Chris Peterson. Chris Peterson came over to Washington. That's the arch rival. It would be similar to either ASU or U of A having really a really, really good, strong program year in and year out, and the rival is just getting their heads kicked in and year out. That has not happened here in recent years. The last team that would that went to a big-time bowl game was U of A. Arizona did go to the Fiesta Bowl. Arizona State has been to Chase Field and El Paso and San Diego and San Francisco and Las Vegas in the last 5 years. Am I leaving anything out? So Oregon was riding it high. Eric's on this rant about how this is a guy that 2 years ago was playing in the Final Four national title?
No, in the title game.
Title game.
In the title game 2 years ago.
They blow them out.
I'm not surprised that it happened.
I
mean, they have fallen quickly, and you're right. Their defense is so bad. I mean,
Brady Hoke's the answer.
He was no help at all.
None. So there's a lot to look at.
And he lost a quarterback named Marcus Mariota, who turned out to be a pretty good NFL player. So
Rick Neuheisel was a really smart guy, and I listen to Rick. And Rick usually has got stuff coming to him through agents and. He brought up this morning on his show Chris Peterson's name. He said, Oregon should just go hire Chris Peterson. Now, you're thinking, there's no way Chris Peterson would ever leave Washington. Well, you know, if that's being thrown out there, that's not somebody who's just throwing out names to throw out names. A. B, you have Phil Knight, who's got, I don't know, a few dollars hanging around. And C, Chris Peterson has shown that he has got it going on. And the Oregon-Washington rivalry is that. It's big time. And that's a really interesting name to me versus all the stuff that's been published. But let me throw one name at you for the Oregon job that could impact Arizona State. And I think it's going to impact Arizona State no matter, and it may impact U of A too, but let me explain my thought process here. So Scott Frost's name has been tossed around up at Oregon. Scott Frost was the quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, up at Oregon, and he did a very good job. And this last year, he went to Central Florida. Goes to Central Florida. One of the quarterbacks he recruited was Ryan Kelly, and Ryan Kelly committed to Scott Frost. Ryan Kelly over at Basha High School right here in the Valley, considered the top quarterback in the state this year. If Scott Frost were to leave Central Florida and go back to Oregon, would Scott Frost's first phone call be trying to get quarterbacks, the kid that has decommitted from Oregon, committed to Arizona State? You may think I'm reaching here. I don't think I'm reaching here. I'm not reaching. I don't think Scott Frost would be a good fit up there, because who did Scott Frost recruit that came in that has really been a game changer? You know, Oregon's one of those programs that every year they would have 2, 3, 4, 5 NFL players. They'd have 5, 6, 8 players on the all-conference team. I was looking at the all-conference teams yesterday. U of A had 0. ASU had the kicker. No offense to Zane Gonzalez. He had a great year, but that was it. No position players. None. 0. Not good.
On the first team, that is.
First team. I'm looking at first team. I don't, you know, third team, nice. Congratulations. Knock yourself out. But your program has got to be judged off the game breakers and game changers on the first team, in my opinion. So Oregon, you know, Chris Peterson, that's an interesting name. Again, that was put out there today by somebody whose opinion I respect a great deal and who does a very good job and who I think is plugged in on this deal. And also, yeah, he's a former UW coach. So Husky fans are probably going crazy saying, oh, he's trying to undermine us, whatever. Tom Osborne, Coach Oz, was part of a good staff here at ASU, and he did a very good job in special teams up there. So I'm looking at that name that's come available. You know, Lane Kiffin's name is bumping around, and he's spent his time with Nick Saban, and Crazy Nick will rip Lane's head off during the game this week on camera, probably, I don't know, for on camera's sake, or also because he needs to get his head ripped off. Mark Helfrich did a very good job as a coordinator, quarterback coach when he was here at Arizona State. Todd Graham, I don't know if Todd's going to lose his offensive coordinator. It's been out there that Chip Lindsey could be at Georgia State. I don't know that. But if you're going through the coaches that are becoming available by being fired, A, or the coordinators are available, B, a guy like Charlie Strong getting blown out of Texas, if you're looking for a defensive coordinator, and I'm kind of thinking, I could be wrong on this, kind of thinking ASU might be looking that direction. You might want to look at Charlie Strong. You might want to look at Lane Kiffin if you're looking for an offensive coordinator. I don't think he's going to be a head coach. Steve Sarkisian's trying to get back into the game. I wouldn't touch Steve Sarkisian right now. Go prove it at another program, and then let's get back together on this. The point is as all of this is turning within the conference, you know, Sonny Dykes' name is now being thrown into the Baylor mix. Were you surprised, by the way, Eric, on Chad Morris?
A little bit.
I mean, the ponies keep him. They ponied up, evidently.
He's in a much less pressure situation there where he can really build the program and do it without the pressures of being in a Power 5 and being in the Big 12 and having to win sooner rather than later. I mean, SMU, if SMU wins 7 or 8 games a year, those people are going to be ecstatic. At Baylor, that probably...
They're probably ecstatic he said no to Baylor, right? The fan base is probably crazy today about that.
Oh, yeah. That's a big win for SMU. That's a win. That's definitely a big win. And he's so tied in there. He's a great recruiter. So good for the ponies.
So Sonny Dykes' name is now being pushed out there for Baylor. Don't you think somewhere deep down inside, Todd Graham is looking at all these Texas jobs and saying, man, timing is everything, but I've got a big old check in the bank account? Because... I don't know. Is Baylor a better job than Arizona State?
Yes.
Is Texas a better job than Arizona State?
Yes.
Is Houston a better job than Arizona State?
No.
I would agree with you on that. Is it just because of conference?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's conference. Yeah. It's easier to
recruit kids to ASU than it is to recruit kids to Houston. It just is.
Really, you think?
Sure.
If you're in Texas?
Sure.
I mean, a guy like Todd, the borders of Texas have just been broken down. Kids go to Notre Dame, they go to LSU, they go to UCLA, they go to USC. They come to ASU.
Kevin Sumlin was at Houston, and he won, but he didn't win like Herman has won. But Herman also played with a lot of kids that the previous coach recruited. It's interesting how that works. Just like Todd Graham won in his first couple of years with a lot of Dennis Erickson's kids.
That's part of the drill.
Of course.
That's why you could take the stance on Todd and just say, look, this is a transition year. 17 is going to be the year they get it turned around. The problem with that school of thought is...
Well, 17 is just going to be the year. It's either going to be the year he keeps his job or he gets kicked out of his job.
But we would think that.
Sure.
We would think that, but I've had some people that have pointed out the buyout is going to be less, but it's still an enormous number.
I can't see Ray Anderson if they go 5-7 next year or 6-6 saying, you know what? I know you've been average to mediocre the last 3 seasons, but we're going to keep you here. But again, I understand the buyout. I know. Money doesn't grow on trees around ASU like it does in Austin.
But it's like Rich Rod's deal. You know, Rich Rod has got some big cigars or a big cigar. He and Sean and Greg, big cigar, put this annuity together. So what is really the incentive to bounce them out of there? If you've got the big cigars that are bumping you and keeping and taking good care of you, why would you move out? Paul Coro's next. We'll talk with Paul about the Suns tonight in action. A little bit about the Suns. It's been a few weeks. And I want to get caught up with him on the owner and this Bledsoe, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins stuff. That is all next. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, the Suns are in action tonight at home against Atlanta, and you may be thinking, why aren't you just sticking with football and all that? And no, that's not what we do here. We had Pedro on yesterday about all the baseball stuff, and there's plenty of room, plenty of space for everything that's going on. And I actually think the Suns are somewhat interesting this year. I've been entertained watching them, listening to them. I hear Al McCoy, he sounds as energized as ever. TV broadcast kind of tough when the team's getting drilled, but more often than not, I do find them interesting. I think the young parts are coming along. They play Atlanta tonight. That means Dwight Howard is in town, and Paul Coro joins us now. Ace reporter, AZ Central Sports, Suns insider, and all-around good guy. Are you surprised where they are at this point of the season, not just W's and L's? What is your reaction about where they are?
I think given the injuries and the road schedule they had early, I'm not too surprised. I did expect them to have a little bit more success. But if I'd gone into the year knowing that Devin Booker was going to have a couple of little nitpick injuries to start and that T.J. Warren would miss extended time and Tyson Chandler would be gone for 8 games, then I probably would have scaled back that thought. I mean, nobody was expecting this team to be a top four seed other than Eric Bledsoe, but I did expect them to be more of a team that could, you know, get into the mid-30s victory-wise, and they're certainly not on that pace right now.
Yeah, you know, when I watch them, it's okay, they've got to go through that whole phase of gelling and figuring things out. And you mentioned, you know, the injuries to Booker, and then of course Tyson Chandler, the family issues on his end, T.J. Warren's injuries. I guess I'm looking at it saying, you know, get me to February 1st and let's just see where they are. Maybe even to the trade deadline, let's see where they are. I don't think that the West is as top heavy, Paul. Maybe I'm wrong on that this year. I don't think that there is, yeah, there's the top four, but I don't think that it's as loaded as it's been in years past. Am I wrong in that?
No, absolutely correct. And, you know, if anything, this sets them up for the natural progression you would want to see in a young team, you know, as a slow build. I think you look at a team like New Orleans right now that's just starting to get healthy and had a horrible start, worse than Phoenix's. Even got beat by Phoenix, as a matter of fact, at home.
Yep.
And that's a team that I wouldn't be surprised to be in the playoffs with how they've started to play now that they got Jrue Holiday and they get Tyreke Evans back. You got Anthony Davis. And so, you know, there's room to still do some things. You know, the Suns are going to be in a position now, though, despite the road schedule, they haven't played a lot of tough teams. You know, they played Golden State twice. They played Oklahoma City. Other than that, you know, there's a lot of beatable teams in there. And I know the road schedule was hard, but they've lost 3 in a row at home, too, to all bad teams, you know, starting with Brooklyn before they left. So there's a lot on themselves, too. And you're right, it's going to be something to look at in February, particularly because that's when the trade deadline is.
Right, right. Paul Cora with us, AZ Central Sports Suns Insider. Suns are home tonight. Dwight Howard in the Atlanta Hawks. He mentioned Golden State. They play the Warriors this weekend up in the Bay Area. The player that you look at and you say, don't quite see how it fits here in Phoenix long term for this guy.
Well, that's Brandon Knight, right? I mean, that's the thought bubble in everybody's head when they watch this unfold. And a lot of it, it's not just Brandon Knight's struggles. I mean, he's never been the player he was prior to here since getting here. And previously the excuse was, you know, the ankle problems, the hernia problems, and those were certainly justifiable excuses. This year, I would guess it would be because of his role, you know, that it's been a bench role, a starting role, in and out, all that. But still, he hasn't been that guy. He hasn't even had the extreme scoring burst that he had, you know, last year. And, you know, in long term, Devin Booker is going to be the shooting guard in Phoenix for the next decade, if everything goes right. So Brandon Knight's role never will be starting shooting guard again, as long as Devin Booker is everything everyone thinks he will be. So he's not going to be totally happy with that. And but, you know, he hasn't really thrived in that six-man role either to market himself well.
But couldn't you conceivably go Bledsoe and Knight and Booker at three? Couldn't you conceivably do that for heavy minutes and see what that looks like? Or is that just not – I know that was kicked around – and then there was the, well, no. Knight's going to be the sixth man. There's been scenarios kicked around. You tell me you're there every night. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know what, in 2018, that probably would look really good when Devin's a little bit stronger and bigger to handle some bigger guys. Right now, I think in piecemeal it can work. They've tried it in a pinch as a starting unit. One of the problems besides defense with that is you've got three scoring guards and to get all of them going when they all come into the game at the same time is difficult. Somebody always gets left out. And so far when they've played together, that's usually been Brandon Knight.
Okay. So I, I wrote it and talked about this last summer. I'm fine trading Bledsoe. It's just me. He's had the knee surgeries. Yeah, he's an established player. I don't see them doing anything in the next few years. And I think by the time Rich Paul and Eric Bledsoe look at the end of their deal, they're going to say, let's go to a bigger market. He just strikes me as that kind of guy. Am I off base in that thought?
You know, I'll give Eric credit. He's really gone all in on Phoenix. You know, where he was kind of reticent about that a couple of years ago when he had the summer holdout.
Yep.
But he's moved here full time the last couple of summers with his family instead of going back to Birmingham for the whole summer and disappearing. And he's bought a home here. He's tried to do the right things community wise and team bonding wise. You know, but as far as a basketball player, this is probably the prime of his career. This is probably as good Eric Bledsoe as you'll ever get. 26 going on 27, doing some nice things, but not catapulting the Suns to that next level.
Correct.
I think if you're going to strike with him, the value is there now, and maybe it is attractive. You know, you already hear about all these Kentucky guys, you know, talking behind the doors about wanting to play together someday. So maybe that would be something that would appeal to him as well.
And that came out earlier this week, what Paul's referring to. DeMarcus Cousins was asked after a game, and he threw out John Wall's name, he threw out Eric Bledsoe's name, and that Eric wants to get us all down to Phoenix. And DeMarcus Cousins, one of those guys that, man, he can be a terrific player for minutes, but he's just a load and a half off the when it's not being played. Or even you see him up close when a game is being played. He's just always complaining, or there's always something with DeMarcus Cousins that's not right.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
No.
It reminds me a lot of Blake Griffin early in his career, and you know, the whining after every call. And
yep.
But you know what? I look at that guy, and there's nobody else like him in the league. You know, that's a big man with oodles of talent, as good as big man as there is in the league. Maybe Anthony Davis has come to that level. Maybe Karl Anthony Towns is getting close. But you wonder if I don't know how much a guy can actually change, but a change of scenery can put the guy in the right place. You know, look at Charles Barkley going from Philadelphia to Phoenix.
And, sure.
He was the model guy for this franchise for a couple years until he had his own opinions again. But maybe he would be so grateful for a better situation that he would get in line with the right guys around him. You know, he seems to be fairly popular with teammates, but not all teammates. So I don't know how to read that. But some of the, like, you know, the beat writer I talked to in Sacramento gets along with him fine. You know, as much as he puts off a bad personality, there are people who find him likable.
A couple other questions with Paul Coro, AZ Central Sports, Suns Insider, Suns in Atlanta tonight. So let's follow through on that then. You're Ryan McDonough, and you look at this deal in Phoenix and the team that you've assembled. You mentioned the trade deadline earlier. Paul, is there going to be something that happens here this year just based on contracts, unhappiness, roles? Do you see something of significance with this roster by the deadline?
Yeah, I would imagine if this team's still in the place they are now as, you know, a bottom five team in the league, unless something changes with that they would be trying to get something for some of their parts, you know, whether it be expiring contracts or people at the peak of their careers that they want to get value. I mean, they're going to be careful, and they're not looking to blow up. I think they all thought that this was part of the build, and there's a little bit more patience in the whole operation now that you're looking at 20-year-old Devin Booker, 19-year-old Marquise Chris, 19-year-old Dragan Bender, you know, Tyler Ulis, TJ Warren being 23. Those are parts that you think are going to be around for a long time, and you want to be sure to do the right things around them. Now, you know, somebody like PJ Tucker, who's starting to play really well again and is in the last year of his deal and could really help just about any good team out there with what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe somebody like him has value in February, you know, if he's not part of the long-term plan. Maybe Tyson Chandler expressed in the summer that he didn't want to be traded, that he wanted to be here, but maybe that changes by February because he knows he could go help a team. It's there's things that they could do. I mean, I don't, blockbuster wise, that takes bigger parts.
Before I let you go then, so we're going to circle back on the owner because you and I get together. We always do this. He hadn't said much. The arena is sitting out there. We had the announcement by the Coyotes. We'll see if anything happens on that front. I still have my doubts on that one. Even the soccer franchise this week announced they're going to get over to the East Valley. What's going on with the building and the arena and the Suns and the owner?
I would say, as far as the arena, that there's, you know, they still have time left on this lease here. And I think they all realize that it's a matter of timing when they push a plan, that the public would probably need to be seeing something more from this team before they went outside, because I don't know that it would be something that could be done without the public's help. I think they obviously had the city's help, that the city would want to stay, and it seems to be a good relationship between the mayor and the owner. You're right. He spoke to me during the preseason.
That was it.
And I think he showed, you know, prudence and patience in his comments about where the franchise is at. And I don't think you heard that sense of urgency. While he thought they could get back in the playoffs and that they were good enough to do that, I don't think there was an expectation level in his tone about it. And maybe in the past, you could kind of sense that, you know, they wanted to end this playoff drought badly. And I think it's got to a point now where they realize, okay, we've got some young pieces that kind of prompt you to have the patience, that necessitate it. Because like I always point out, Devin Booker is not going to be the best Devin Booker until about 5 years from now,
right,
6 years from now.
Right, right. He's really good already.
So
he's fun to watch.
That's what you're building for.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see Chris stay out of foul trouble. That was on draft night. I talked about him getting fouls and his technicals, and I'd like to see Bender at least sniff the court every now and then. But, you know, I get where they are. And
yeah, Devin Booker wasn't playing much at this time of year last year.
That's true.
He's getting a lot of DMPs from Jeff Hornacek then, and he's turned out okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Appreciate your time, as always, at Insight. Safe travels. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Brad.
See ya. There's Paul Coro, AZ Central Sports Suns Insider, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. So I'm sure today you're going to be hearing a lot about Cardinal players being asked about attitude problems within the locker room, and are there attitude problems within the locker room, and is everybody on the same page? And look, when teams aren't good, this is what the news cycle turns into typically. It turns into a couple things. First, is the coach's job in jeopardy? And the answer on that one here is no. Is the general manager's job in jeopardy? The answer here on that one is no. Is the quarterback's job in jeopardy? And the answer here on that one is no. Do they need to start exploring to find a quarterback replacement? I've answered that question about a year and a half ago. Because I'm still in the let's have Carson Palmer here, but I'm also one of those that doesn't like it when organizations go through years of turmoil and do not have somebody else developed. And there's also this side of it too. Fans like seeing who is next. Fans get fatigued with certain players after a while. Doesn't matter what sport it is. After a while, there'll be players that can do no wrong for years and years and years. And then by the end of their career, or near the end of their career, they become the person that fans go after. Some of that is happening with Carson Palmer, although I think some of that is very unfair. I think he's played well in stretches, but clearly he doesn't have, in my view, the game that he had even last year, even towards the middle of last year, towards the end of last year. When he got hurt at Philly, everything's changed since then. That's just a fact. So I do think that they should. I'm reiterating something I've said over and over and over, but I think people are now starting to catch on to this. Please find a young quarterback. It's funny what happens when you have a young quarterback like Dak Prescott who comes in and plays out of his mind and people go crazy about him. It's funny what happens when you have a young quarterback like Jared Goff over in Los Angeles who sits and sits and sits. And even though he hasn't done much yet, he still has come out and fans are interested to see his development and to see what he's doing. You can go out and go get the big quarterback like they did with Carson Palmer. It all works out well. Or you could be the Houston Texans and go throw a lot of money at Brock Osweiler, and it's a train wreck, an absolute train wreck, an absolute dumpster fire. So I'd rather it be, let's see what they do here in the offseason, because interest will go to a whole new level. And yeah, there'll be quarterback controversy talk. That's part of the deal.
Don't you think, though, those guys being Kime and Arians sort of have to handle the whole Carson Palmer situation with kid gloves?
Of course, but it's a business.
Sure.
It's a business.
It
you
is.
Know, look, it's no different, Eric. We're sitting here in 2016.
Almost 2017.
Almost 2017.
Crazy.
We're sitting here in 2016, and a year from now, or even, I don't know, 9 months, 8 months, when the next football season starts, it's going to be things like, is this Carson Palmer's last year, last hurrah? It's going to be, here's the new sharp, hotshot quarterback. It's going to be, is this Todd Graham's last year? That's just how it's going to be in 2017. We go through cycles in this business where coaches are out there and everything is calm and everything is safe. And then all of a sudden, it's this guy's head gets cut off and this guy gets whacked and this guy gets let go and this guy gets moved out. And we're going to go through one of those cycles. Like, the Diamondbacks are so far off the radars that what they did with Chip and Stu was not a big deal. I mean, it was to me, but to the fan base that's out there, it's just kind of like, Earl Watson coming in last year for Jeff Hornacek was kind of sort of a big deal to me, but it was like, You know, Don Maloney leaving the Coyotes was met with basically a yawn because Dave is still here. You know, the football team is a whole different deal. Both those football programs, you know, down at U of A, if they're that convinced that Rich is going to get them dug out of this hole, good luck with that. It's a huge hole. Huge hole. It's always good in sports when you can say the words Tiger Woods and put them together on a sentence where we're not then following up with back surgery. So in the last 15 months, Tiger Woods has not played because he's had not one but two back surgeries. Tiger's playing in a pro-am today. Tiger is playing down at the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas. Yeah, I got to look down at it because I've never heard of the event. But he's played at the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas. What I like about this format is it's an 18-man field. He has 72 holes, and there's no cut. So once you're in, you're in. If you stink out loud because you haven't played competitively in 15 months, so I am fascinated. Tomorrow's going to be a Tiger Day. It just is. This weekend's going to be a Tiger Day. And we haven't had Tiger Days in a long, long, long time. Not last year, the year before when he was out of the Waste Management Open. It was a Tiger Day. Followed him around, and it was dreadful. It was just like, oh my gosh.
It was dreadful. It really was.
It was just like, oh my gosh, this was the best player ever. This is LeBron not able to dribble with his left. This is MJ not able to jump. It was right down there. This is Randy Johnson throwing an 81-mile-per-hour fastball.
I hope Tiger doesn't become Mike Tyson. I hope he doesn't become a cartoon character where he's going and playing these events and, hey, get some FaceTime and pick up
John
a check.
John Daly did that.
He did.
And nobody wants to see that.
But John Daly and Tiger Woods are about as far apart financially, personally, professionally as you can get.
Sure.
Personality-wise.
But it is interesting for people that say, oh, I'm done and I'm sick of Tiger Woods, and you just don't get it in sports. This is good to see one of the greatest ever, just completely transform, change the sport, put a lot of money in a lot of people's pockets, and he's still trying to do it after two back surgeries. Does he have any doubts? That's what I'd want to ask him. Do you have any doubts? And just see what he's got to say on that. So that's of interest to me. All right, we're out of here. Thanks for being with us. Plenty of content up on the website, sports360az.com. We're Arizona-centric. Our football show is on tonight. Did you see the show last night, E?
I did. Looked good.
Did it look good?
Yeah, it did.
You didn't screw it up, huh?
Did you watch it? Apparently you didn't.
No. I'm going to watch it tonight. I was busy.
It's on a lot. You can catch it at various times.
You know, people tell me that.
They
just run us into the ground over there, which is, we don't mind.
That's good. That's fine. That's what we like.
Thanks for being with us.